Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Shout out to all you dunkers. Thank you for once again embracing your bounce. The finals are here. What a game that was. Are you ready to unpack it? Because I'm kind of doing the thing where the luggage is everywhere. I just kind of threw it in the carry-on bag. So it's in there, but it's going to be a hard unpack.
Yeah, there was a lot going on. Like, it's one, I'm very excited that the finals are here. Two, absolute titans defensively facing off against each other. So that was always going to be fun. But with game ones, it's very easy to fall into the, well, this happened, so that means the series is going this way. I'm pretty sure overreaction is going to be flying around all over the place. So unpacking this one is going to be a lot. And that's
what we're here for.
This is true.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's what we're here for. I'm in the bubble. I'm in the bubble. I haven't seen any takes. I haven't seen anything fly around. We are here to talk about the beautiful game and what a game it was. Where, what on earth did Boston just do in that fourth quarter? 40-16 in the fourth quarter. 21-41 from three. I'm sure everyone had Al Horford going 6-for-8 from three and Derek White going 5-for-8 from three and Marcus Smart going 4-for-7 from three.
Not just Marcus Smart going 4-for-7 from three. Marcus Smart hitting us with a behind the back to himself move on a drive in the first half while Boston was still trying to gather himself from the punch that Steph Curry threw in that first quarter with 21 points and 6 made threes.
Nah, again, a lot to unpack, but it's hard to not start with a salute to Derek White and Al Horford because goodness gracious.
Yes.
Goodness gracious. But let's get to it. You keep me on track. Keep me organized. Run the play.
I will try to run point for you. Well, first, let's just start with the very basic stuff. The Celtics won game one, 120-108, behind, as you mentioned, a 40-16 fourth quarter, which saw Golden State go into the mud a little bit offensively. Rather less mud, but more so they lost the plot, it felt like. The same flow that we saw in the first quarter where Boston had some lapses, but ultimately Golden State was pinging the ball around, getting dribble penetration, bombing away from three at the same time. It was just an onslaught there. Didn't feel like that in the fourth. Boston got some timely shot making. Al Horford made big three after big three, as did Derek White, as did Marcus Smart, as did Jaylen Brown, who really set that tone in the fourth quarter. 10 of his 24 points came in the fourth. Had his foot on their necks early on. Tough drives, tough pull-up jumpers. Got the lob to Robert Williams to bring within five. It just a salute to Boston for what they were able to do. But let's focus in on the lineup that they closed with, the lineups that they had most success with. No Robert Williams on the floor. Al Horford, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. And then they just went small from there. You saw Derek White in there. You saw Peyton Pritchard in there. You saw Marcus Smart in there. We talked a little bit about Robert Williams and his role in this series and how Boston would try to find a way for him on the defensive end. What his matchup would be. Could he maintain his help responsibilities without Golden State opening up cracks elsewhere? How did you feel about Robert Williams' minutes? And what did you like about Boston's smaller lineup?
I told you to run the play. Now we're about to run all sorts of actions right now. So this is on you. I see you run the Chris Paul
Chris offense. Paul. I thought I queued it up.
What's up? I'm sorry. No, I'm playing with you. I think you got to take it in totality. Part of Boston's success on this run has been the two big lineup working. And we had questions. How would it work against Golden State? And they came out. They put Robert Williams on Andrew Wiggins. And mildly successful. Until Golden State kind of figured out, hey, we can make him move a lot. And so the automatic help or roaming that he had against PJ Tucker, a little different versus the random movement, versus the random action. So you saw multiple possessions early in the first half as the game kind of progressed where Robert Williams is helping. Now he's trying to recover back out. Now it's a closeout. Or he's helping, and now his man is setting a screen for a Klay Thompson to get a three. Which we've seen a big struggle with as far as helping off and then trying to get back to the level. So we saw those issues. And then Golden State came out in that third quarter And, you know, Steph Curry's getting going in pick and roll. They're kind of putting pressure on him in a way where it feels like they've found their focus and their focal point is to hurt him. And the interesting part for me when it came to Robert Williams was when they were kicking him out of pick and roll in the third quarter. When they were scram switching him out of pick and roll to get him out of action, I was like, oh, they know. And while that's a good idea, that's not exactly the concept you want with your starting lineup to where you have to protect Robert Williams to that degree. And so I was concerned there because if Boston doesn't have the blend of that lineup working with the smaller lineup working kind of twofold, it gets tough. And lineups for me, actually, before I get back to Williams, I feel like lineups are going to be such a key in this series. And I'm not even at the point where I'm like, oh, this lineup can't play together. Because I'm sure there's going to be the don't play Draymond, Iggy, and Otto Porter together. I'm sure that's going to come out in the next 12 hours or something like that. To me, each team found a rhythm and a flow with a different lineup that countered the other teams. So Golden State's smaller lineup in the first half worked pretty well against what Boston threw out there in their normal rotation when they try to go small to start the second quarter. Grant Williams didn't have much of an impact. And so, and I'm not putting it all on Grant Williams, but they were able to kind of be switchy, execute. They made shots offensively, so it kind of worked. And then they kind of went back and forth because Boston came back with their ultra really good small lineup of Horford, Tatum, Brown, White, Smart. And we saw how that changed the game in the second half. I mean, the second quarter. So that kind of tennis match is fun to me. And then, where was that? Robert Williams?
Yes.
When Boston, I'll zoom past, I forgot my point. That lineup that I spoke of with Boston feels like it's going to be the game changer for Golden State to figure out. Because as great as that fourth quarter was, I felt like them having success while smaller, while also having success against Golden State going small late in that game, that's probably the one series question raiser to me. Because you look at Boston's small lineup, that activity they showed defensively with that lineup was great. They took some off-ball stuff off the menu. They were physical, they were active, they were getting Golden State in the mud. There's no easy exploits. The matchups at times, if Marcus Smart's on Draymond, he can't be really a roller because it's a switch. And then, you know, you're trying to find the cracks on that end. On the other end, Al Horford could space. So there's no one person necessarily that Draymond can help off of. And even if they put him on Smart, maybe you can use screening action and switch there. So how they figure out that lineup is going to be key with how they continue to put pressure on Robert Williams. Because back to Williams, I found my point. See, I was working for it.
There we go.
When they mirrored his minutes with the Iguodala lineup,
that's the one.
That felt like the matchup for him. Now, Golden State found a little bit of success, which is why they went back to Al as far as rolling and then hitting someone cutting from the corner. But he was allowed to have an impact. That changes things. What did you think of the lineup?
I was intrigued. We talked about it on the preview. I was like, hey, they're going to want to roam with Robert Williams. I wonder if they give him the Andrew Wiggins lineup because they haven't really used him as a screener like that. And so, of course, they go to that and Golden State starts using him as a screener like that and as a cutter like that. And you already pointed out, like, Robert Williams had to work pretty darn hard. To his credit, like, he competed. He was up there trying to work. It just didn't work very often. And so him finding kind of that matchup with Andre Iguodala was intriguing to me. And I wonder what Golden State is going to do to counter that moving forward, if that becomes a thing. Because what went a little quieter in this one with Golden State losing, like, what did we really see from Jordan Poole in this one? Like, it wasn't, he had a couple of drives that got him down to the free throw line, but beyond that, like, he wasn't that much of an impact player offensively, which they need, because that second unit had him in it. And you kind of need him to bring the scoring on that end. They stay switchy when you have Iguodala out there with Draymond, with Otto Porter. In theory, you should be able to flatten Boston's second unit out with switching And then you have your mismatch hunting guy in Jordan Poole if all else fails. Because the spacing isn't going to be great with Iguodala and Draymond Green out there together. And if he's not giving you that offensive punch to kind of counterbalance that, and Boston's able to, again, find a matchup with Robert Williams, you force misses, you're able to get out and run a little bit, that's a little bit of a problem. And to your point, I'm glad you brought up like how Golden State's going to match up with Boston's smaller unit. You mentioned Draymond Green maybe on Marcus Smart. Do you think they try Draymond on Derek White? Or do they just say he's not going to make 4 or 5 threes again? Like, does that seem like a cleaner? Because we've seen Draymond placed on guards before just to turn those pick and rolls into switches or just put him on non-shooting wings, period, so he can roam around.
Well, the issue with that lineup is now you have White as a screener. You kind of put yourself in that same pickle is my first theory. The thing with Poole is when you rewatch, I want to kind of see, because he has to have an impact against Williams, I feel like. Against the smaller lineup, I don't know how much juice he's going to have, or he's going to have to really just force the issue mindset-wise. I'm glad you brought up the switches, though, because I was very intrigued with Golden State's defense. They gave a lot more switches against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown than I had expected.
Same.
Especially coming off a Dallas series where they literally said, we are showing and recovering and doing nothing else unless we absolutely have to, and then we're not going to do it again. And they were giving the switch early and often. And what was a fun thing to kind of look at in contrast was not just Golden State being willing to give that switch, put Curry in the matchup, the help wasn't early. Like, we're coming off a series where Miami was like, okay, you can have the switch. We're here to help. You can see us. Golden State gave the switch, and all their help was late in the paint at the rim, which kind of altered Boston's drive and kick early. Now, it was interesting. As the game went on, Boston noticed that and said, all right, fine. Tatum, you screen, get the switch. We'll play out of that. And they kept hammering it because that's what Boston does. Once they find a pressure point, they just use that and play out of it. And that's, I thought that that was kind of their struggle early, is they couldn't find the pressure point. But how did you feel about those switches that Golden State gave? And do you think that's something they can continue to do going forward? Or should they adjust back to show and recover? Will that open things back up for Boston?
I think I want to see another game. That's probably bad podcasting. But like, I think I want to see another game of it to really get a better feel for it, because I definitely understand the theory behind Golden State saying, okay, we're just going to switch this. We want to flatten you out. Because I think with, and we talked about this a little bit during the watch party, at least I floated this idea out to you. I was like, maybe Golden State is more comfortable switching Steph onto Tatum specifically because he's not the same downhill powerful threat as a Luka Doncic. And I think Steph, with his core strength and just his defensibility, period, because as we talked about on the pod, like, he's had himself one heck of a postseason. He's had a good season defensively, period. But this postseason is really perked up. Maybe you can survive those Tatum drives more than you could the Luka drives. And with that, you don't have to send as much help. And that doesn't open up the passing the same way. And Jason Tatum wasn't a world beater. He did his job. I mean, he didn't shoot well at all. But he did do his job forcing matchups, kind of forcing Golden State to think a little bit. What was it, 13 assists for him tonight? And so he still made an impact elsewhere, but the gambit kind of worked in terms of him as a scorer. So that's why I'm kind of like, I would like to see game two and see if they continue that. And I guess zooming out, I feel like the thought for Golden State, beyond not being worried about Tatum in the same way as Luka, they just don't want Boston to have easy cracks to attack, because Boston can get in the mud offensively. And in theory, Golden State, at least their starting unit, like, they still have the collective length, collective IQ, just the personnel in general, to where you can flatten them out and then provide help elsewhere. As you mentioned, they had late help. Kevon Looney switched out. He'd have Draymond roaming behind that. And so it's kind of a bet to, let's flatten you out early. And if you are able to get downhill, now we'll show help. And we're going to dare you to be us from three, because outside of the Jays and Peyton Pritchard, when he's out there, all of these shooters we're at least somewhat comfortable with. If you burn us, you burn us, but nobody that we're super scared of. And to Boston's credit, multiple threes from Marcus Smart, multiple threes from Derek White, multiple threes from Al Horford. And so they got it from elsewhere and they lost that bet. I wonder if Golden State is like, okay, they beat us with this, more so than, holy crap, we got to do something different.
Golden State's reaction is going to be very interesting, because even with that, they were in a position to take this game. And it looked like they were going to at a certain point. What becomes interesting is going to be the battle in the paint, because Boston's dribble penetration got stronger as the game grew on. The driving kicks we talked about where, yeah, those guys knocked down a lot of shots. But you also saw Smart getting drives, White getting drives. If those guys are getting drives, it's kicking to Tatum, Brown, Horford. And can they hit those notes going forward combined with the pressure points? Because Boston has a unique blend. You know, it's not all set based. A lot of people say it's a lot of one-on-one, but they have a shot-making element to their team. Jaylen Brown showcased that start of that fourth quarter. That being a piece of what they bring to the table makes it tough, because you defend well, they hit those shots. Okay, we're good. Now they hit you with a pressure point. Okay, what's going on? Now the dribble penetration comes. They're still hitting shots. Huh? What just happened?
That fourth quarter just happened.
But that's the unique blend they bring. And for Boston, there's two stats that jumped out to me, not to be a king of the box scores here, but 43, I think you said it, 43 made field goals, 33 assists. Whenever Boston has that ratio, I know they're humming to a degree. The other one was 26 points in the paint for the Golden State Warriors.
34 for Boston.
And that's also where my mind goes to for game two. Golden State has to hit the right notes offensively. We talked about that on the preview. And their playoff run has been so good because of the blend. And I thought Boston did a really good job with their effort of containing the paint touches, containing the easy baskets. So while Golden State was going nuts from three, Boston was able to hang around. And you see Boston be able to just kind of poke at little things for Golden State. We're going to take away the paint. We're going to make your off-ball activity or your off-ball movement, we're going to bring that closer to the mud. We're going to be active, physical, put you later in the clock. Now you're trying to drive. We're keeping that in front. We're just slowly moving things around. And so you zoom back to that start of that fourth quarter, or even when Steph came back in against Robert Williams, guess what they were trying to do?
Trying to find Robert Williams.
Find Robert Williams, play pick and roll. Not a bad idea. Not a bad concept. Not totally Warriors basketball. And that's the hope. That's the hope that Dallas was hoping for. We hope you all do this one thing, and now we can go score on the other end. Golden State didn't cooperate in that series. It'd be interesting to see how they react going forward.
And this is what makes Boston such a unique challenge for Golden State, because, like, one, just the personnel is just better. Like, it's, like I said this during the preview too, like, it's kind of the blend of some of the elements you saw from Dallas in terms of the cohesiveness and just general, we want to switch a bunch. And also just the general length, size, athleticism of Memphis. And now you're combining that together and you have this Boston group to where they can take away your off-ball stuff without some of the lapses you saw from Memphis. They can actually physically hang with you in a way that Dallas could not, even if their switching and stuff was tight. And it's going to play at Golden State's habits. And we've talked about both of the offensive processes at this point. I can check this out now. It didn't feel like a super high turnover game for either team. That's 14 for Golden State, 13 for Boston. So it wasn't even a big swing in that regard.
Well, there goes your narrative, sir.
No, Darren, I'm just saying.
You take your turnover battle elsewhere, pal.
It's something I wanted to key in on.
Go high, hello that somewhere else.
But the fact that you didn't even get turnover mayhem from either side, and you still saw segments of in that first half, Boston was in the mud a little bit in the half court. In this fourth quarter for Golden State, they were in the mud offensively. Like, if you're having those stretches without the turnovers, I feel like the margin for error is a little bit lower now. If you can't sort it out now, what happens if you get Boston getting even more active? Because one of the big things with going with Al Horford instead of Robert Williams, we talked about this a little bit during the watch party, keeping an eye on the drop and just how deep the drop was. Al Horford playing closer to the level of the screen than Rob Williams was. So like those same pockets that Golden State was attacking early in the first quarter weren't really there, which also contributed to kind of flattening out what Golden State wanted to do lately. And so I want to see just what the process is going to be like for Golden State. Will they keep their tempo up? Will they be able to find, will they be able to find stuff for Jordan Poole? Like, I'm curious to, we're recording this right after the game. I want to rewatch and see exactly, get a better sense of what happened with Poole. Was it just an off night? Was it Boston taking away something? Was it bad decision making? It just felt quiet on that front.
And it's interesting because Golden State did do a lot of positive things. I guess for me, coming off that game, the larger picture is, can they do it against that lineup? Like, the more we talk about it, the more it feels like that's going to be the answer for them. Because if you go back and watch that game, Boston's activity defensively on some of those possessions, like just the rotations, the activity, both teams did it, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. It was very fun to watch both of these teams fly around defensively and rotate and help each other, take away the paint, stunt recover. But for Golden State, they have to find a way to unlock that. And again, they have to make Al Horford a pressure point somehow. No one's been able to really do it during this playoff run. And if he can now play against Looney or play against Draymond and have the nuance to be at the level, dropping back, showing help and recovering, that's a game changer.
And to that point, just to flip a quick question, since we're so deep into this season and into this postseason, I guess when do we get to the point to where we say, like, okay, maybe Horford just can't be a pressure. Maybe Golden State just can't bank on that.
Well, if you can't, you're going to go home.
I mean, fair.
I mean, that's the, if you can figure to walk in there and say, hey, we can't do nothing without, I don't know how you're going to win. Just lineup wise, eventually they're going to get to that and you got to deal with it.
I got you. I guess my thing would be, if you get to that point with Al, do you find comfort like hunting smaller? Do you try to make Derek White a pressure point? Do you try to engage Jaylen Brown off ball to see if you can get some slip ups there? Which, shout out Jaylen Brown, talked about the scoring binge at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Defensively, he was pretty locked in. I had questions and concerns about how he would navigate some of Golden State's more intricate stuff, but he held up pretty well defensively, at least on first watch. I'll do a thread tomorrow and see if my eye lied, but like, it felt like he had a pretty solid night.
I quietly have my eye on something. Draymond Green's matchup. Which way do you go with it? How do you, and he gave a lot of great effort, so don't get me wrong. He had some of the Draymond plays where, you know, he was getting after it on ball, off ball. How does he deal with the minutes where he has to guard Horford? Because this isn't the regular Al Horford where you could just dare him to shoot, because he's shooting. No hesitation. And Golden State's defense at his best when he's roaming. If he's roaming off Al, what does that give up? It looks Miami adjacent at times. So I'm keeping an eye on that to see what that matchup's going to be like. Which is, this is why it's such a weird game, though, because Boston literally felt like they had almost no purpose again in the third quarter offensively.
Mm-hmm.
And the Warriors were looking like they were fully out of the mud. How did you feel? Because it felt like, how do we not be prisoner of the moment and forget what the Warriors did to get that lead?
Yeah. Like, honestly, I don't know. Because, like, even when Golden State was humming in the first quarter, it felt, how do I phrase it in a way? Because I'm not trying to take credit away from Golden State, because they legitimately played well. But, like, you were looking at some of the threes that Steph made early, and it's them not matching up with him in transition. or it is like a super deep drop where it's like, wait, Steph can't do that. And so even with Golden State humming, it did have an element, at least for me, of, okay, Boston just has to tighten this up. Like, it felt kind of low-hanging fruit adjacent for Boston with some of the openings. And again, Steph is just Steph, so you can tighten up your scheme and he can still blow you up. That's just why he's one of the greatest players of all time. But just from a process standpoint, it felt more Boston doesn't seem to have a handle on this, more so than Golden State is just blitzing them and there's nothing Boston can do. And so once some of that stuff tightened up late first, early second, we got the shot making from Boston. But the defense, I mean, we saw more of those possessions where it's, okay, they're running their post split. This is switched early and with physicality. There's nothing there. They try to cut more physicality. They bump them off the spot. The pass isn't there. Hands are high, so you can't force that window anyway. Now it's 9 on the clock and they have to create some. And now it's a Clay Mitty. It's a Steph drive. It's Andrew Wiggins having to create something. And it just felt like Boston's defense was there. And so I was kind of like, all right, if that's shored up, what can Boston do offensively? Because Golden State early on had did a good job of getting Boston kind of out of their flow. But Boston was able to pick away at some stuff in the half court. And you combine that with the three-point shooter from the guys that Golden State felt comfortable with. This is kind of what got them back in. They were leading at halftime at that point. And so now I'm in the midst of trying to get a handle on how comfortable I feel with Boston's offense. Because they got the shot making they needed. But it feels like, I guess aside from Al Horford, which is a good point from you, like, I think Golden State is okay with the guys that took the shots. They just made them. So I don't know if that warrants Golden State saying, we got to scrap this, or we got to be more aggressive defensively, or we can't help as aggressively. And to that point, and I floated a little bit earlier, like, is it, if you just can't afford to help off of Al Horford at this point, based on the postseason pedigree in terms of volume and efficiency, if you're at that point for Golden State, is it worth just saying, all right, we're going to stash him on Smart or we're going to stash him on White, and if they become rollers, then we'll just deal with that. But we can't let Al shake loose. Like, is that the shift for Golden State?
The funny part is I don't even know if there's going to be a significant shift like that. The way it felt like, hey, those guys are making shots. But that's the tricky part of the playoffs, especially when you get to the finals. Like, this is a sprint. It's only 4. And to be honest, doesn't really matter how you get the 4. If you get one nuts shooting game from these guys, then you get a Tatum game, then you get a Brown game. You only need one more.
True.
So for Golden State, I think it's going to be a desire to be sharper. I think they're probably going to look to just clean up a lot more offensively and keep it tighter defensively, because in theory, you did what you wanted to do. Jason Tatum shot 3-for-17. But this is the playoffs. And you can have the best game plan in the world. You can execute it to your heart's content. And your reward can be 15 threes from Al Horford, Marcus Smart, and Derek White. And then what do?
Well, you do your post-game presser and hope to tie the series up in game 2. It seems, actually, while we're kind of on Tatum, because we talked about the switches being given up a little bit earlier from Golden State and some of the late help. Was there anything from Tatum that you saw that you think he needs to clean up in game 2 moving forward?
Were you trying to get me to go on a redacted rant?
No, not at all.
There's plenty of that on the broadcast. Oops. High quality stuff. Shout out to Mark Jones, by the way.
Friend of the program, Mark.
Got the automatic in there. That was funny.
That's good stuff.
I thought Tatum did his job. I think that I don't know that he expected the coverage that he got. I do think the late help bothered him on the drives a little bit. I do think he wasn't necessarily. I don't think he had the mindset.
There it is.
To get the same rhythm shots that he usually does when he has those switches. I just don't think he saw it coming. So that'll be an adjustment. But he's made this run the whole time. Finding a way to make plays has been the most impressive part. His playmaking has continued to grow and grow and grow and continue to have the impact where even on an off-night shooting, you can lift your team up. That's a huge step for him, especially on this stage of the game. So this is going to be a wild finals because I'm sure, like, we can talk about what Boston did, and it was an incredible fourth quarter, but I'm absolutely certain Golden State feels like they did what they were supposed to do, and they just lost. Because that's Golden State. You know what I mean? Like, hey, we did what we were supposed to do. We had Tatum in the mud. Those guys can't do that three more times. And if we put together 48 instead of 40, we'll be all right.
I'm with you. I would say just as to the late help point, I think that's actually, now that I'm thinking more about it, that's actually a really smart bet from Golden State. Like, all right, we're going to give you the matchup, going to let you drive. Then we're going to show help behind that. And it's kind of forcing Tatum to beat them with pull-up middies or floaters versus, like, hard drives getting all the way downhill. And that's – Jason Tatum is an incredible scorer, but, like, that in-between area, oddly enough, might be the weakest part of his game at this point. Much more comfortable isolating in the mid-range, facing up, getting into the jab series, that nature, versus – let me come off this high screen, or let me just drive. Let me stop on a dime at the elbow, or let me get to this floater if you give me a pocket of space. And so I don't know if there's a real adjustment to Tatum, because even with that, what was it? 3 of 17 from the field, 2 of 12 from two is insanely low. And Tatum struggles from the area, but he isn't that. So I think if he has a sense of this is what it's going to be, these are going to be my pockets, like, I would expect him to be a little bit better in the area of the floor in game two. But that's also kind of the brilliance of Golden State's defense, because you may get comfortable with a look and then they're throwing different things out there. Like, they sprinkled in zone once Boston got rolling in the first half. Do you anticipate seeing more zone from Golden State? Or do you think that's more of a, that's too much of an exaggeration from what they saw in game one?
I think you'll just see, I'll say they'll still continue to mix it in. I don't think it's something they'll lean on, but they may throw it in at times. I mean, I thought in the first half when it felt like Boston had finally found their rhythm, where they were like, oh, you guys are still switching, we're going to post Tatum, and then the Warriors were like, you're right, but also here's some zone. Please forget that for a little bit. So I thought that was an interesting dynamic. I think it'll just be in the back pocket for me. But how much of this is just the Warriors needed to score in the fourth? Because they had that stretch where they just didn't score. And we know that's Boston's formula. Defense turns into offense. My mind goes back to that, man. And we talked about it in the preview, so if I'm rehashing, I'm sorry. If the Warriors get in the mud, it's going to get interesting. If they get stagnant, it's going to get interesting. If they can't get the same off-ball movement consistently throughout the game, it's going to get interesting. We saw moments where it really popped, and it looked like, boy, this is a whole different challenge for Boston. We saw moments where Boston was able to kind of bring them back into the mud. That's part of the battleground for me. That and lineups stick out to me like a sore thumb. Because if you could take anything off the table from Golden State, it becomes a fair swing, a fair fight, so to speak.
Oh, man, I'm ready for game two already. This is... Oh, man. I just want to watch this game again and be able to just slow things down.
We just watched it. You just watched it with me.
Yes, that's true.
What else you want me to break down? What else you want me to do, dog? Been breaking down this game for the last three... You know what?
Steve Gold Jr., I respect it. But no, I just want to dig into this one to see what else can be poked there from both sides, because this was... It felt like three different games in one in a certain sense. Golden State initial push, Boston responds, back and forth the fair. Golden State third quarter, which they've just been crushing teams in the third quarter all year long. And then this Boston fourth quarter, where it's Jaylen Brown, and he's just doing whatever he wants early fourth. And he's finding Rob Williams. And then here comes the avalanche of other guys. Here comes Marcus Smart again. Here's Derek White knocking down contested threes. It's just insane the switch that Boston was able to flip in this fourth quarter. And I don't know how much of it is sustainable, but as you mentioned, like, they got to do it three times. Like, this doesn't have to be a formula in which they win 58 games and get a one seed or something. They just need to hit enough of the right notes to win three more times. And if you even want to zoom out, and I don't think Boston's going to view it this way just because the mentality they have on the roster, but they got home court now. They've done their job, quote unquote, already. And so it's up to Golden State to respond. I'm just excited. I'm ready to see it. I am ready to see it. Do I have any other questions? I do have more questions about this game, but I think that's just going to be solved me watching. How did you feel about Boston's bench? We got Pritchard minutes. Well, quick hat tip to Daniel Tice, actually.
Yeah, no, folks. Because I did not believe. The hashtag is Big Apology. We are bringing the segment back. You need to apologize to that man.
I was like, you know, I don't think this is a Daniel Tice series. I don't think you could feed. You definitely don't want him on the floor with Steph. And he did. Steph did get a pull up three against the Wilds. And I was like, against the second unit, I don't know if you want to feed Jordan Poole something easy either. But Daniel Tice fought. Competed defensively. Knocked down a corner three, which is huge. And now that I'm looking at the box score, it's 6 minutes and he was a minus three. So I really could have just took a victory lap there. But he played better than I expected. Hat tip Daniel Tice. He survived. Boston was able to get into the lineups that they really want to get into. I'm curious about what happens with Grant Williams. 16 minutes in game one. I wonder how can he make more of a stamp offensively. Defensively, I think he just has to play better. Like, some of the switches gave too much of a gap for Golden State to attack with some of the pull-ups that was part of the Steph Curry run early in the first quarter. But like, what does he do offensively?
He got to make shots and drive closeouts. But the problem is, I don't know if it's as much of a defensive series for him as it is for Derek White. And that's no disrespect to his game. But just looking at Golden State's personnel,
a lot of screen navigation.
Who does he impact in that way? You know, it's a lot more off-ball stuff. It's a series where Peyton Pritchard can survive a little bit more. So if you value his playmaking and his shooting, he may get those minutes. Unless you feel like you need defense, then you may go Grant. It may become more of an offense-defense type decision rather than we need you to guard X, so you got to get these minutes. Type deal is my best guess off the top of my head.
No, that's a good point. Because you go back to the series that he's dominated. I mean, you got a lot of isolation possessions against Kevin Durant. Second round, he had to deal with the body blows with Giannis. Last round, the body blows from Bam or Jimmy Butler whenever you switched on to him. Golden State doesn't have that type of guy. Like, your best bet, I guess, in that mid-post type stuff would probably be a mix between Clay and Andrew Wiggins. And Golden State isn't running the offense through either of them. Again, I was intrigued with them using Wiggins more as a screener and as a cutter in this one, just to kind of find and hunt out Robert Williams. But, yeah, that's a good point. If this is just – now it just kind of becomes, can Peyton Bridges survive enough defensively? Which he had some possessions matched up with Steph, and he wasn't burned, which is interesting to me. I wonder if that's going to be something that Golden State picks at more, just to see if they can play him off. But I think that's about it. I'm just ready for game two at this point. Did you have any lasting thoughts on this game?
I'm sure I did. I'm going to remember 15 of them after we stop recording, which is usually what happens here. What a fascinating, fascinating game one. Just because, as you mentioned, so many different things were thrown at each team. And I don't know if we have a solid answer for any of it. I don't know if it's as easy as Golden State tightens their defense up a little bit. And, you know, the dribble penetration goes away. Now Boston's back in the mud. It's not as much drive and kick. I don't know if it's as simple as the lineups work out better. You know, I don't know if it's as simple as they're able to unlock Curry off ball again. or that there's more slips, or there's more Draymond as a screener against Robert Williams. So there's so many different little things that can go into the fabric of this game. I feel like both teams walk away feeling like we did what we were supposed to do. Because I'm sure Boston is looking at this win, probably not feeling like they did their best job. They won. But I'm sure Ime is probably thinking,
I was just about to say, he's like,
there's some, right. There's some things we could have done better tonight, folks. And I know Golden State is probably remaining confident and looking at the three-pointers and thinking, hey, we could do better. So it's just, it's going to be such like a small game series. And I want to see, I hate to use the word, but the adjustments.
Ah, there it is.
Is it more Tatum attacking Curry in pick and roll? Does Golden State have an answer for that smaller lineup? Is it more attacking Robert Williams and making him even less playable than he looked at times? Who moves another chess piece off the table? That's going to be the fun stuff for me.
Sounds good, sir. Sounds good. Before we officially close out of here, do you want to toot your horn on the Liberty knocking off the Fever yesterday?
Yeah, they did the thing. Liberty season might be back. This might be the month of the Liberty. Don't do that. Don't do, I dare you to do that. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Buddy. Go ahead. I'll clip it so fast.
It's fine. It is. It is okay. We will see if the Liberty are able to turn some things around.
Whole different level of packed up. The defense from Stephanie Dolson, per usual, man, really cut the water off for the Fever. Sabrina's starting to figure some things out. Natasha Howard, they had a flow. It was beautiful to watch. So I'm intrigued to see these Liberty take another step. Just a little nudge, a little baby step.
There you go. There you go. Shout out to the Liberty for knocking out the Fever. The Fever in the mud for most of that game. Particularly the second half. Like, it was just, okay, we're going to run the stagger for Kelsey Mitchell. Oh, no, it didn't work. Well, someone has to do something now.
I thought the nail help from Liberty was good, but it's fine.
It was. The Liberty defended them well. It wasn't just the Fever like throwing up over themselves, but it just kind of shows like one, this is just a young team. They're still trying to find what their flow is. And we held a watch party for that game yesterday. I was talking about that too. It was like, this is a different matchup altogether from that Sparks win. To where the Fever want to push, and the Sparks don't really want to do that. The Liberty are okay playing fast. In fact, some of the issue from the Liberty this year has been them playing too fast. But in general, they're fine with the pace being. And so you're not going to create those same advantages, or you're not going to catch them off guard playing that fast. And once the Liberty were able to get them in the mud, it was like, okay, what do you have now? And the Fever didn't consistently have anything. At least from a process standpoint, they did get some tough shot making. But tough guy to live on.
Speaking of different matchups, the Connecticut Sun beat the Las Vegas Aces tonight, 97-90, led by Jonquel Jones, dropping 20.
Ah, they gave her the ball.
She only had 9 shots.
Ah, they didn't give her the ball. I haven't watched that game yet. I will check that out in the morning as well. But all right, shout out to the Sun, because the Aces did do the thing in the first matchup.
They did. The hashtag is MV Plum.
Pushing the propaganda on the pot. What did Kelsey have in this game?
23,
23,
right.
8-4. There we go.
Light.
Light work for Kelsey Plum. I feel you.
The real thing is Jackie Young is really good. She had 26 on 12 shots. Goodness gracious.
MIP, All-Star, maybe an all-WNBA team berth. We'll see. We'll see. Jackie Young has been incredible this season on both ends of them. And that's what makes it extra fun. 3-point shots falling forward. The drives have always hit. The mid-range game is there. She's defending a little bit of everyone on the perimeter this season. And yes, we did just turn a Fever Liberty segment into Jackie Young praise. Absolutely. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all a little bit later.
I swear if they move the Blazers from Portland.